You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 14th of February. Happy Valentine's Day. We'll look at the crazy playoff race that's coming up and a points game Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, lots of those today, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. How are you? Thanks very much for tuning in. Happy Valentine's Day. All right, I have a thought for those of you out there. This is deep, deep thoughts with David Locke. They're not worth anything. But here's a thought for you. If you're Valentine's Day and it sucks today because you just had a breakup, and not a divorce, a breakup, here's my thought for you as a nearly 50-year-old. There it is again. And that is, you actually should celebrate breakups for two reasons. One, you got a new experience. And two, at that point, your other choice is divorce. And that's not good. It's really nobody who's been through a divorce like, yeah, that was right. No, there's two sides to it. There's the Louis C.K. There's nobody who's ever been through a divorce that was like happily married, right? Like that's by definition. But there's also nobody who's been through a divorce like, oh, I really want to go do that again. So if you're sitting there and it's Valentine's Day and you're feeling all bummed and you're yearning for your past relationship and it broke up, I can tell you as someone who's nearly 50, there it is again, that looking back on it, all those heartbreaking breakups were totally worth it because it meant we didn't get married and therefore I married a better person. So it'll work out. There, that's my thoughts for you for happiness. That I don't think I've got a future in that. All right, so last two nights just kind of exemplified to me that this run is going to be insane. We're sitting here right now, Nuggets at 17 losses, Clippers at 17 losses, Jazz at 18, Rockets at 20. So I decided to go run down the schedule. And I'll tell you what, I hate to tell you this, but what I found was pretty daunting. So obviously you want 2-3. And when we go to Basketball Reference and we go to 538 and we go to all these other sites, they're not very favorable to the Jazz. Like, why? Like, oh, they don't like it. Okay. So 538 has the Jazz as 53 wins and the Rockets at 51 playing 4-5. At least we got home court. Excuse me, that's Basketball. Yeah, Basketball Reference. And 538 has kind of a similar outcome to that in the way they project the standings. They project the Jazz at 53 wins and the Rockets now at 54. And the Jazz as the fifth seed. I got to tell you what. I hate to tell you this. I hate to be a bummer on Valentine's Day. I agree with 538. I just looked at every single game the rest of the way, broke them up into five categories. Percentage of win, and this is based on 538, but you can look at them and see the same thing. Your percentage of win is 80, is 0 to 19. Not a team has that. Then your chances of winning are between 20 and 39%. So these are tough ones. The Jazz have six of them. Six. At Boston, at Oklahoma City, at the Lakers, at Dallas, at Portland, at Denver. Six. The Nuggets have three. The Clippers have two. The Rockets have three. We have six. Way harder schedule. These are the ones, as you go down the rest of the season, what happens is you win the winnable games. Teams win the winnable games. 50-50 games, you actually split because the other team has something on the line. And then it's hard to win these games. This is what's going to define the Jazz rest of the season. If the Jazz go 1-5 in that, they're going to be the fifth seed. If they go 2-4, they're probably going to be the fifth seed. If they can find a way to go 3-3 in those six, maybe they can be the fourth seed. But this is daunting. Then you look at games that are 50-50. The Nuggets have seven. The Clippers have four. The Rockets have six. And the Jazz have five. So games that are 50-50 or worse, the Clippers only have six of those games left the rest of the way. For all our hope that like load management and Paul George's hamstring, no. They've only got six of those the rest of the way. They're 28 games. 6. Nuggets have 10. 7 of them are 50-50 games. 3 are ones where they're distinctive underdogs. Rockets have 9. They've got 6 50-50 games and only 3 where they're distinctive underdog. And we've got 11. So Jazz 11, Nuggets 10, Rockets 9, Clippers 6 games. 6 losable games on their schedule. And the Jazz have 6 of those in which they're distinctive underdogs, and a 7th in which we go to Oklahoma City and we're a 41% dog, 41% chance of winning. So we have 7 games the rest of the way where we're really not expected to win. These are the 7. Now, here's the good news. Flip it. Be optimistic. Unlike if the Clippers drop one of their games they're supposed to win, if the Rockets drop a game they're supposed to win, they don't actually have a lot of places to make them up. We go beat the Boston Celtics in Boston, beat Oklahoma City in the 2 games in Oklahoma. Now, I wonder it's been such a great season. We haven't been to Oklahoma yet. Steal one in Dallas again. Beat the Blazers in Portland. And we swing, that really swings the standings. That swings things considerably. The other one is there are 7 games in which teams play head-to-head. We're involved in 4 of the 7. So Houston at Utah on the 22nd, second game back, mammoth game. Mammoth game. I don't think the Rockets will have played, actually. Unless they play Thursday on TNT to open it back up, I'm not entirely sure the Rockets will have played. The Clippers, by the way, don't play until Saturday on with Paul George's hamstring. It's nice for them. The Rockets do play the Warriors on the 20th. We play the 21st, and then we both play each other the 22nd. So the Rockets do play that first game back. So maybe James Harden will go to Vegas. Then we play on the 5th at Denver, the 7th at home against the Clippers, and the 14th final game of the season against Denver. By the way, I was wrong. I've been saying we play the final game of the year all the time. The season actually ends on the 15th. We'll be sitting home watching the final night of the season. It doesn't look like it'll be particularly interesting. The games on April 15th, which is the final game of the regular season, Clippers are at Portland. I guess we could hope Portland pulls off a win. Maybe they'll be in a playoff race. But otherwise, it doesn't look like Denver played us, so they're not playing. And Houston is home against Memphis. I mean, we'll beg for miracles if we have to. But maybe Memphis and Portland are a playoff race. Who knows? So that's the daunting news. Here's some more daunting news. The Rockets, who everybody has behind us, 16 of their final 28 games, they have a win probability of over 80%. Okay, so in the regular season, you look at that and you say, well, 16 of 80 at 80%, and this is the way all the projection models are looking at it, is, well, then that means that they go 13-16. They're going to go 16-0. This time of year, teams don't lose those games. Or they do very, very rarely. We've done this, for those of you who have been with us in years past, we've done this every single year, and that's what we've learned, is teams very, very, very rarely ever lose those games. And so the big thing that happens as you get down the clutch, part of the situation, is that teams that are supposed to win certain wins win their certain wins. Last year, I stopped keeping track at one point. But those early games, teams were winning them at a 91% rate. The should win games where you're between 36 and, or excuse me, where you're between 60% and 80%, suddenly get one at a 70 to 71% rate. It's a little higher than usual. Oklahoma City last year dropped a bunch of them late. But teams don't lose those games the way they would in the rest of the year. So the Rockets, 16 of their final 28 games are teams in which they have an 80% win probability. Clippers, 11 of their final 28 games are 80% win probability or more. Nuggets is 7, Jazz is just 6. I mean, you have to win those. Everybody will. Then the 60 to 80% games, which I just told you are clicking about 72%, so a little higher. We have 11 of those. I mean, virtually, we're going to have to go 11-0, which is impossible, seemingly. But we're going to have to try it. Rockets only have 3 of those because all of theirs are whitewashes. Clippers have 11, and the Nuggets have 10. So of the games remaining that are 60% or better, which these teams are going to win at like an 80%, maybe higher rate, the Clippers have 22, the Rockets have 19, the Nuggets have 17, and the Jazz have 17. Like, I actually think there's a chance we're going to end up with a Denver-Utah 4-5 series, which, you know what, we might take instead of having to play just anything not to play the Rockets. For all we know, Utah-Denver play that Thursday night to decide who gets home court for 4-5. We're down 1 in the loss column to Denver. But looking at the schedule, I hate to tell you this, it's daunting. It makes some sense why the projection systems have them what they are. The Rockets play 16 of their final 28 games against teams with an 80% win where they have an 80% win probability or better. The Clippers play 22 of their final 28 games in which they have a win probability of 61% or better. Whereas the Jazz play 6 of their final 28, really 7, against teams with a win probability, and their win probability is below 40%. Now, go grab those games, and those are big because those swing things. You know, if the Rockets trip up, if the Rockets get an injury and they lose some of these games, if the Clippers load management funky and they lose some of these games, then that changes everything. Because the Clippers only have 2 games against teams with where their win probability is below 40%. They can't make these up. 50-50 games, by the way, usually go 50-50. If you're wondering. 50-50 games go 50-50. Because the other team's pretty good. At least that's what I found traditionally. Last year, when I stopped keeping track, it was 18 and 18. What's interesting, and this is the good news I'd have for you. The unlikely wins, the ones we're talking about the Jazz have, teams actually win at nearly above 50% on those. So that's kind of a worthwhile note. Now, it'll be interesting what that is and how that, what those games are. But for the Jazz, it's Celtics, Thunder, Lakers, Dallas, Blazers, Denver, Thunder, all on the road. Those 7 games will probably dictate this season. 4-3, we're playing home court. 3-4, maybe. 2-5, no. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, located 4646 South State Street. Also located in Linden and in Logan. I just got an email the other day from a listener heading up to Logan to see the... what's taking place up at the Murdoch Hyundai in Logan. We can take care of you there as well. So if you're going to stop by, if you're shopping for cars this weekend and you're going to look at a Hyundai, make sure you email me first. We'll set you up with the right person. When you walk in, you'll get that VIP treatment. You'll know who to ask for. They'll take care of you. They'll know you're a Locked On listener. They'll give you the Locked On discount, special treatment, and set you up. If you're looking for a car in general, make sure you include Hyundai on the list. I didn't know a lot about the brand before I got involved, but now... it's just terrific. In fact, it's the car we take on our road trips. It's the car we take. We gave my son drives because it's the safest one we own. And he's a 17-year-old driver. These are as every bell and whistle. I'm driving the Palisade right now. It's absolutely fabulous. Has all the bells and whistles, all the controls for snow, safety features, cruise control, self-driving. Just terrific. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. also located in Logan and Linden. So stop by and visit. All right, it's Pack Friday, which is now Points Gain Friday. Let's take a look at where we are at the All-Star break after that daunting open to the show. Sorry, guys. Let's just start with the Jazz. Number one offense in the NBA. And we're going to take a look at the title contenders. The number one offense in the NBA since Jordan Clarkson joined the team. What we're looking for here that I believe a title contender is a team where everybody on offense is above average. The problem you run into is if you don't have this, when you get in the playoffs, teams game plan and they leave guys open and force shots into their hands. So let's take a look at the Lakers. Anthony Davis, 2.5. Dwight Howard, 1.5. JaVale McGee, 1.0. They've got great dunkers, great length. It's why when they play the Rockets, it becomes a problem for them. Caldwell Pope is positive. LeBron is just a 0.3. That's a real sign of aging to me on LeBron. That's the first time I've seen that number. It's a little stunning. Last year, LeBron was a 1.3. Last year in Cleveland, wow, this is really interesting. LeBron was a 2.8. 16-17 season, LeBron was a 2.8. 15-6, I'm doing this for the first time. 15-16 season, he was a 2.0. 14-15 season, he was a 1.7. So as we added the three-point shot and everybody else got more efficient, he did too. But this, so 13-14, he's in Miami. So if you take his last Miami year, he's a 4.5 points gained. 15-16, I'm writing this down. I think this is stunning. 4.5 and 13-14. In 14-15, LeBron is a 1.7. So he slipped his first year going back to Cleveland. 15-16, LeBron's a 2.0. 16-17, he's a 2.8. 17-18, he's a 2.8. 18-19, he's a 1.3. Slide starts. And 19-20, he's a 0.3 points gained. It's interesting. That would be concerning for me if I'm the Lakers. The easy answer is that LeBron is coasting. The not easy answer is LeBron is getting old. Has his shot distribution changed? He went to the line 12.5% of the time last year. This year he's going to the line 9.1% of the time. That's an aging sign. 17-18, he went to the line only 11%. Took 18% of his shots, his threes, and went to the basket all the time. Interesting note there. It's worth keeping an eye on LeBron. Negative players for the Lakers. Avery Bradley, negative 0.3. Kyle Kuzma, negative 0.6. Rajon Rondo, negative 0.7. Could be interesting. Worth the look. Denver's interesting because Denver does not do well on our system because Denver lives on the fact that they don't turn the ball over and the fact that they offensive rebound. Jokic is a 1.2, Paul Millsap 0.7, Porter 0.6, Plumlee 0.6, Noah Vonleh, they just added positive, Jeremy Grant positive 0.4, Torrey Craig even, Jamal Murray's minus 0.2 virtually even, Monte Morris minus 0.4, Will Barton, who they rely on, is a minus 0.5, and Gary Harris is a minus 1.3, which makes that Malik Beasley trade a little interesting. I keep waiting for Gary Harris to turn it around. But he is not. Let's take a look at the Clippers. Montrezl Harrell, 1.1. Landry Shamet, 1.0. Zubac, 0.9. Kawhi, 0.8. Paul George, 0.6. Mo Harkless traded. We do not have Marcus Morris on this list yet. I'm not sure why. Patrick Patterson, even. Patrick Beverley, minus 0.2. Jermichael Green, who no longer plays, and Lou Williams, minus 0.7. I've said this before. They have a Lou Williams problem. He's inefficient and a bad defensive player, and he's expected to play. Let's take a look at Houston. By the way, no shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll be back with you Thursday. Harden, 3.3. They lost Capella, is a 1.4. McLemore, 0.8. Harkenstein, 0.8. Tyson Chandler, 0.3. Tucker, 0.2. Covington, 0.2. Daniel House, 0.2. Tabo, minus 0.2. Austin Rivers, minus 0.6. Eric Gordon, minus 1.3. Russell Westbrook, minus 1.6. Problematic. It's what the Jazz did. Make Russell shoot. It's where everybody, Russell killed him. No, he took 10 more shots than Harden, who's a 3.3, and he's a minus 1.6. It's great. It's a very limited analysis point. Let's look at Utah. Rudy, 2.9. Bogdanovich, 1.7. What a pickup. Clarkson, 0.6. What a pickup. Bradley, 0.6. Much better than we give him credit for. Niang, 0.5. Ingles, 0.3. O'Neal, 0.3. Donovan Mitchell, average, dead even. Emmanuel Mudiay, not in the rotation, minus 0.2. And Mike Conley, minus 1.4. So the key to that is Mike Conley gets going in the second half. We're all right. Last 10 games. So since Mike Conley came back, do I have a filter on here? I must. Let me see if this is right. Last 10 games. Mike Conley, negative 0.6. Is that right? Playing 7 games? Probably about right. 16 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists? Yeah. So Mike Conley, negative 0.6 in that stretch. Joe Ingles was a minus 1.7. We were a mess. Emmanuel Mudiay was even good, was a minus 1.8. Let's look around the league, hottest, coldest. But it's interesting. So Mike Conley, from that standpoint, Lakers have an issue, LeBron's aging, Rondo and Kuzma. Rockets have a million issues. We'll see if they can solve all of them with spread. The Denver Nuggets have some offensive issues. We don't. We've got the best offensive lineup out there. We've been talking to you a lot about Homie. And as Homie emerges and develops, the amount it is disrupting the real estate world is becoming more and more clear, more and more obvious, and pretty cool. They've saved over $50 million from commissions for people. That's when you start to move the market. Help thousands of buyers and sellers with over $1 billion of real estate transactions in 2019. A recent study out of BYU professors, Homie is selling for more money and 8 days faster over the last 3 years. Homie's average savings for a seller is $10,000. That's what Homie's doing for people. It's kind of awesome. Pretty cool to have that taking place. Text LOCK to LOCKE to 88588. And it's working so well, we're beginning to see the expansion to Vegas, to Arizona, to other marketplaces where Homie is now impacting the real estate market. Text LOCK to 88588. And Homie will assign you an agent that will help you every step of the way. They'll do all the things that agents do. Find your dream home, tour homes, make offers, negotiate the best deal. But then the thing they'll do that nobody else will do is get you money back. It's Homie. Text LOCK to 88588. All right, let's look at hottest players, coldest players in the NBA. Hopefully it's been interesting for you. Kind of a geeky off day show. James Harden is still the number one offensive player in the league at 3.3. Number two is Karl-Anthony Towns at 3.3. We have less players over three. The third most impactful offensive player in the NBA is Rudy Gobert. at plus 2.9. But all he does is dunk. Right, but if everybody could dunk every play, they would. You're saying it with me. I know you are. But he can't create his own offense. Right, but he creates offense that nobody else can create in his 11 possessions a night at a rate that impacts the game more than an average player, more than anyone other than James Harden and Karl Anthony Towns. Pretty incredible. Dame Lillard's a 2.8. Excuse me. Dame Lillard's a 2.8. I always get criticized. You can hear me drinking during the show. I did not bring anything in to drink today, and you're hearing what happens. So, sorry. Sometimes you have to hear a drink. Today you won't. Lillard, 2.8. Devin Booker, 2.8. Should be an all-star. John Collins, 2.6. Anthony Davis, 2.5. Rashawn Holmes, similar to Rudy. Really hurt the Kings when he got hurt. Played 37 games. 2.4. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 2.3. Brandon Clark, remarkably 2.1. And Zion Williamson is a 2.1 in 10 games as a rookie. It's incredible. He is bending the game already. Chris Middleton, 2.0. J.J. Redick, 2.0. Mitchell Robinson, 2.0. And Duncan Robinson, 2.0. I've talked about this, but it's been discovered, it's kind of an eye-opening all year, is these guys like Duncan Robinson, Davis Bertans is a 1.5 now, he's really slipped, Rudy Gobert, Rashawn Holmes, Mitchell Robinson, you wouldn't naturally think of them as the best offensive players in the league or most impactful. I'm not saying best, I'm saying most impactful. But in a league that's trying to get to the rim and shoot threes, when you can do that at a very, very high rate, it changes who you are. Rudy's shooting 70% and getting fouled at every five times he touches, has a possession. So, you know, if Rudy could get his free throw shooting up to 65, 68%, Rudy would be the most impactful offensive player in the league and the best defense player in the league, which makes him pretty interesting. Still undervalued. Luckily, he's playing this weekend. Bojan, by the way, at 1.7, comes in about the 20th most impactful, 19th most, well, call Zion, keep Zion in there, 20th most impactful player in the league. Christian Wood playing very well in Detroit deserves some recognition. Any all-stars that are, any players that are all-stars are going to be celebrated this weekend that are negative was a question I got. It's interesting when you look at that because obviously, Russell Westbrook is, but here are some of the players that are negative this year that I think would surprise you, or at least average. So, Donovan's average. He's at zero. Tobias Harris is not an all-star, but he's at negative one. Jamal Murray, we talked about earlier, is at negative two. Not an all-star, but a little bit surprising, I think, for people that he's negative two. Derrick Rose, for all the love, is negative two. So is Bogdan Bogdanovic. Never goes to the line. For all the talk about how great he is, I mean, minus negative two is not, I mean, it's league average and it's hard to be league average and it's hard to get every possession that's league average, so I'm not sure that I'm going to, like, but Jason Tatum is minus 0.3. Boy, was he great last night, though. But he's still not that efficient for all the talk of him. He only goes to free throw line 9% of the time. Pascal Siakam, minus 0.4. Not the greatest shot distribution. Now they need a guy who's a number one option who can make those plays and do those things, but it's interesting. For all you'll hear about that, Pascal Siakam, minus 0.4. A little surprising. After that, we drop into some of the guys that are pretty deep into this at minus 0.6 and below, and that Kyle Kuzma's there gets a lot of recognition, maybe why they're willing to trade him. De'Aaron Fox is a minus 0.6. Jay Crowder is a minus 0.6, which eventually will come to bite Miami. Lou Williams is a minus 0.7, as we talked about. That's a problem for LA. Andrew Wiggins is a minus 0.8. We'll see where he is by the end of the year. See if that actually changes in a different system. I'm doubtful. Kristaps Porzingis is a minus 0.9 for all the talk of Kristaps. Some of these players' offensive efficiency is vastly overrated. Al Horford's really having an awful year at minus one. They benched him just recently, and he is now coming off the bench. CJ McCollum, minus 1.1. So these are not all stars, but I think the question was basically, you know, who are the players in a lot of value and a lot of talk and maybe aren't matching up? Ricky Rubio is a minus 1.4, so is obviously Mike Conley this year. And then our buddy at the very bottom, Russell Westbrook, is a minus 1.6, though he's been pretty darn good recently. Like, it's way up. Justice Winslow, minus 3.1 in Miami. Let's go to who the hottest players in the league are the last 10 games. I don't feel like my 10-game search actually worked. Give me 1 second. This does not look right. Sorry, apologize for this. Live, this never is that good to have this happen, but it doesn't have enough play. Doesn't have enough games played for some of the players that I would suspect, i.e. Zion Williamson, did not have the right amount of games. All right, this looks better. We'll now see who the hottest players. I wonder where Jordan Clarkson's going to come in. Lack of free throws overall might keep him down a little bit. By the way, I didn't see that Eric Micah got a game in got a game played in Sacramento. Congratulations, former BYU player. Didn't see that. All right, hottest player in the NBA, Kyrie Irving. He's only played 4 games though. Got to put our search in. Jamal Murray is. We look at set last. They've got to have played in 7 of the last 10. That's the search. Jamal Murray's been hot, too. He's only played in 5. John Collins is the hottest player in the NBA at 4.6. Dame Lillard, number 2, at 4.1. Anthony Davis at 4.0. Buddy Hield at 3.6. Chris Middleton at 3.5. Serge Ibaka at 3.5. TJ Warren, who Phoenix gave away with a first-round draft pick, is at 3.4. Hassan Whiteside, 3.1. Glenn Robinson, tearing it up in Philly. Rudy Gobert, 2.9. Trae Young, it's been brilliant in Atlanta. Ben Simmons, Duncan Robinson, Seth Curry, Karl Anthony Towns, Kristaps Porzingis been hot. We played a lot of these guys. Jay Crowder, James Harden. Wow, what do we do for these players? Landry Shamet, Nikola Vukovic. Maybe it's just because they all played us. Jordan Clarkson, 2.1. So he's in that grouping. Coldest players in the league. Kendrick Nunn, who we saw, he was terrible, minus 6. Terrence Ross, Carmelo Anthony is a minus 4.3 in his last 9 games. It's coming to an end. 33% shooting, 27% from 3. Zach Collins gets hurt. See what happens. Victor Oladipo, minus 4 since coming back, struggling. P.J. Washington, the rookie, struggling. Reggie Jackson, minus 3. Darius Garland, minus 3. Lou Williams, minus 3. Gary Harris, minus 3. Kemba Walker, minus 3. Wow. Didn't expect that. C.J. McCollum, minus 2.7. Drew Holiday, minus 2.2. No Russell Westbrook in this list. Joe Ingles, minus 1.7. I skipped a bunch of players. Ricky Rubio, De'Aaron Fox, Jeff Teague. Where is our friend Russell Westbrook in the last 10 games? He has been great. He has been carrying them, and he is rating, and this will be the key to their season, has been a negative 0.7. So even when he's brilliant, no longer shooting threes, only 6% of his shots. He's a negative 0.7. Harden, struggling, is a plus 2.5. Interesting. That is Locked On Jazz today. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hope you're doing great. Have a super day.